So years ago, I was sitting with a friend, and he and I were talking about ministry. We were at a stage in our life where we were beginning to explore what it was going to look like for our future. We were just coming through seminary and then began stepping into a ministry context and working within the church. And one of the questions that we explored together is, what makes you angry? And we thought, I mean, lots of things make me angry. But what makes you angry inside? What rises up inside of you that actually fuels you to do the mission of Jesus in the world? So it was a really good question for me to explore with him and others. And that question continues to surface for me, is what is my anger leading me to? And we're going to explore that this morning. We're going to look at Jesus and his anger. The Bible is very clear, just so we're on the same page. It says, be angry. But in your anger, do not sin. There's anger that can lead to things that are destructive and lead to things that I believe lead us away from the way of Jesus. But then there's also an anger that I think we have to pay attention to, that is very much part of the human experience, that anger is necessary, it's natural, it's given to us, and learning to pay attention to those things that rise up inside of us, I think, can lead us really to determine what is your mission in life, why are you here, how God has wired you, what rises up inside of you. So I'm going to ask you this morning to pay attention to what's going on inside of you and to listen very carefully to what God may be saying to you this morning as we walk through this passage together. So we're going to be looking at Mark chapter 3 this morning. So if you would turn over in your Bibles to Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. We're going to look at a story about Jesus' anger and also the anger of the religious leaders and those the anger that led them in basically two different directions. And then we're also going to be looking at the book of Amos, one of your favorite books, I'm sure. Amos is in the Old Testament. So what I want to do is give you a heads up now so that when I say turn over to the book of Amos, you can feel really good about yourself because you know where it is. It's in there with the prophets after the book of Psalms and Proverbs. It continues on and then right somewhere in there, like around Joel and Habakkuk and I think Obadiah, those great names, Amos is in there somewhere. Okay, so feel free to look in your table of contents, which I always had to do and still have to do at times to find books like Amos. And then in Amos, we'll be in chapter 5 and in chapter 8. So you want to keep that marked. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's start in Mark chapter 3 and read verses 1 through 6. Another time Jesus went into the synagogue and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, "Stand up in front of everyone." Then Jesus asked them, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" But they remained silent. He looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus. This is the word of the Lord. Now, once again, Jesus finds himself in a confrontation with religious people, with the religious institution. Another confrontation arises. And I love how Jesus responds to them. He doesn't get down in the mud with them, but he responds with a question. And his question causes them to respond in silence. They're trying to pin Jesus and to trap Jesus. And look at the question again that he asks in verse 4. He says, "Which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill?" Weeks ago, we explored how each rabbi had his own interpretation of the Torah. The Torah was a life-giving word to God's people. This is the best way to live, the best way to be my people in the world. But it was left up to the rabbis to interpret how to go about doing that. And one of the pillars in the Jewish faith was this idea of Sabbath, to set one day aside out of seven that was a holy day, a sacred day, This day was unlike the other 6 days, a day that you set aside that was life-giving for you to reflect back on all that God was doing in your life, maybe a time to reflect on what was going on in your own heart and in your own life. But it was a sacred day, and each rabbi would interpret the things that you could and couldn't do on Sabbath. Certain laws, certain regulations, questions would rise up. Well, you can't work on the Sabbath. Well, what is considered work? And they would determine these things are considered work. These are the things that we do not do on these days. So Sabbath became this really important pillar among God's people, a life-giving day. Problem is that it turned into something else. It turned into how to regulate and control a time where we could prove that we're pious and that we have everything in order. Now, one of the big questions that arose in the Jewish community is what happened when two laws happened at the same time that seemed to contradict one another. So you've got a conflict. So in this situation, we have two different laws coming from the Torah happening at the same time. So the question would then be, what do we do in a situation like that? Which law is weightier than the other law? So it's like kind of this concept of heavy law and light law. Which one is heavier and which one is lighter? Which one do we give more gravity to in this situation? So on the one side, you have this law that comes up that human life is precious and you must do everything you can to preserve human life. Because we've been created in the image of God, we matter. So human life, human suffering, those who are in need, it's extremely important to do something about those situations. So human life was held in super high regard. But then you also have Sabbath. And Sabbath is a day that was given to preserve human life, but also a day in which you didn't work. So if something rises up in Sabbath, you're like, you know what? We can't do anything based on how we interpret these things to come to play. So the question then is, which law is weightier, heavier in this situation? Now look at verse 2. Some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. They think they have Jesus trapped because if he heals this man on the Sabbath, he's a lawbreaker. If he doesn't heal the man on Sabbath, he's a lawbreaker. So they've got Jesus pinned. They're watching him to accuse him, to cast him out. We've got him. Now, low-level religion is what I would call it, kind of this low-level thinking, really likes to determine who's in and who's out. It loves to create these boundaries. These people are out, we're in. And I find this with people who operate kind of in this low-level way of thinking. They operate in a spirit of judgmentalism. And people who judge others, really I think it's more of a apply to control people. It's to keep control. So we judge others to so that we can stay above the other and keep control. We're right, they're wrong, they're out. We're in. Jesus is trapped. So the question then comes, now what do we do? He's trapped. And what does he do? He asks the man to stand up in front of everyone. I love how Jesus responds. Stand up. Stand up in front of everyone in the synagogue. And he asks a very important question. What is more important? To heal, to humanize, to deal with this injustice, to deal with human suffering, or to keep the Sabbath? Which one is weightier? And what I think Jesus is doing is he's revealing once again the true intent of the law of God. This is the heart of God. I've come to show you, not to do away with the law, but to reveal to you the true intent of the law. That why it was given is to preserve human life. Now, the teachers of the law have a system which they create order for the betterment of humanity. This is how it works in our tribe. Kind of get this tribalistic mode of thinking. It works this way. Jesus comes up and bumps up against the tribe and says, listen, I'm not opposing the law of God. I'm actually giving you the true intent. I'm taking it deeper. Low-level religion likes to keep things manageable and under control. Jesus takes us deeper into the true intent of God's law. It's like there's that which is true, and then there's that which is more true. It's like this is true, but this is truer. It's even deeper, and Jesus comes under the surface to give us more of the true intent of the law of God. He asked the question, and notice they don't respond. They're silent. Brilliant question. Because he's bringing them back to the heart of God. Now look at verse 5 with me. He looked at them in anger. Now, if you were to break this down, this is like a snorting kind of anger. This isn't just like, I'm a little bit ticked off. Jesus is snorting. He's super angry, but he's also deeply distressed. Notice that his anger is mixed with grief. It's anger and grief, and he's angry mixed in with this grief, all these emotions going on, and it's driving him, distressed at their stubbornness of heart, says to the man, stretch out your hand, and his hand is restored. Now notice again, the anger of Jesus is mixed with grief. The religious leaders are placing their ideas of what is lawful and unlawful on Sabbath over and above human suffering. Keeping rules and regulations. The law of the Sabbath, you must not work on the Sabbath. This is how we honor God. You must not do this or that. But we're forgetting Sabbath was given as a gift to humanity. It was given as a gift to preserve life for our benefit. A time to replenish and refresh and remember that God is for us and not against us. So it was given as gift. They're turning it around and controlling this gift and making it into something that it was never intended to be. Again, Jesus is giving us the true intent of the law of God. What is Jesus revealing? Once again, human life is way up here, held in high regard. That when there is human suffering, we do something about it. We don't turn away from it, we move towards it. And we act against the injustice. So let's explore the anger of Jesus here this morning. He's angry, and rightly so. But what is his anger leading him to? Now notice, Jesus is not angry about how this is affecting him. He's not angry about how this is affecting him. Many times, our anger arises how it is affecting us. Now, as a side note, I do want to add this. There are times when we're hurt, when someone does something to us, or we're in a situation where we get hurt or wounded. And I'm telling you, you should get angry about those things. There are certain things, relationships, that I would call toxic relationships, that I would say you need to remove yourself from those situations and create boundaries for yourself. There is a sense in which we say, no, I'm not going to stay in this, and I'm not going to take this abuse. So I want to make sure that we're clear on that when I'm talking about how we get angry over things that affect us. There are some things that we should get angry about how they affect us, and that we remove ourselves from those situations. And once again, some relationships, some situations that we're in that we should remove ourselves from. And I would encourage you, if you're in a situation like that and there's some things going on inside of you, don't just let that stuff sit there, but process it with somebody that can help you. Because what we do many times with our anger is we just stuff it down, we deny, say, you know, I'm just going to suffer through this, and we don't deal with the anger inside of us. The problem with anger, my friends, is that it turns into something else. It turns into bitterness. It can turn into hatred. It can even lead to murder, as we see with the Pharisees, right? The Pharisees in this situation are angry. They're very angry. But what does their anger lead to? At the end, they plot with the Herodians, how might we kill Jesus? That's a sickness. There's something not being dealt with inside. Now, just as another side note, you may find this interesting. Pharisees and Herodians didn't like each other. And they're partnering in order to kill Jesus. It's interesting, right? That they're like, these are our enemies, the Herodians, because they're not doing it right, and yet they partner together to go against Jesus, which is a whole other sermon that we'll get to maybe someday. Who knows? But really interesting. But back to this anger inside of us that can rise up in us, and then it can turn into something else. My dad, I remember years ago, said to me, he says, Jonathan, there are a lot of wounded people in the world. People walking around with wounds. They've been hurt. They're angry. And we need to deal with the woundedness in people. Deal with the wound. When I meet an angry person, someone who's really harboring some things, I know there's something else going on underneath that anger. There's a wound there. And we want to address that, and we want to bring healing to that wound, and we want to start talking and processing those things. So one of the questions that I often ask people when those things rise up into us is, what are we going to do about that? And how are we going to go about processing that? And working with folks, it's extremely important to find a professional to help you process the things going on inside of you, okay? But I want to talk about Jesus' anger again. Look at it. Jesus' anger is mixed with grief, which I find really interesting. This is the thing that's actually moving him towards injustice. And the question that I ask of the text is, what is Jesus angry about here? What's going on? And does it make us uncomfortable that Jesus is angry? Is that the image we have of him? He's angry, but what is he angry about? Now, the religious people, once again, took something that was given as a gift and they turned it into something else. Religious leaders, pastors, spiritual advisors in the church are given to you as a gift. We are here to serve, to bring you to life, to help you connect with God, to bring vibrancy and healing into your life. So church leaders, authority figures, these people that we perceive on top sometimes, they are given to you as a gift. And that's how we should be operating, us church leaders. But in this context, the leaders had become something else. Kind of like these policemen over your life and regulating what's right and what's wrong, how you stay on the inside and don't move to the outside. They're creating all these rules and regulations. This low-level religion will oftentimes create slavery inside of our hearts. This sense that we're not okay in the presence of God and there's things about us that are not right and that we need to change. And they heap a bunch of shame and guilt on people. I would say to you, remove yourself from that. If there is a situation, like I'll hear people talk about the churches that they're existing in and I'm thinking, man, you need to get out. You need to go somewhere else. That's not a healthy environment for you to stay in. I understand loyalty, but do not remain in that toxic situation. But remove yourself from that toxic situation. The institution, which was given as a gift, actually brought people and enslaved them. They were shaming them. They were blaming them. And again, Jesus is not angry about how this is affecting him. He's angry over what the institution is doing to people. That it's causing suffering. His people had forgotten the plot. Why we're here? We're here to bring healing and hope and restoration to people. Have we forgotten the plot? Have we made it about something else? And Jesus brings the good news. In Luke 4, one of my favorite passages, Jesus reveals to us, this is why I have come. Luke chapter 4, verse 18, to proclaim good news to the poor, good news to those who are kept out, proclaim freedom for the prisoner, recovering sight for the blind. And then he says, to set the oppressed free. This is why I have come. This is not about me. It's about setting people free. But his anger is mixed with this grief, and it moves him to do something. Not just to sit back, but he acts and he moves towards the injustice. Another observation, Jesus does not carry his anger, but he releases it. He does not hold on to it. This is not, okay, I'm going to hold on to this anger, and about 4 weeks from now, you are going to get a healthy dose of my anger. It's going to unleash on you. And many of us have been the recipients of that. Many of us have participated in that, where there's this outburst of anger because we're not processing the stuff going on inside of us. We're not dealing with it. And again, anger doesn't just lie there. It turns into something else, and we're like, what in the world is going on? But Jesus does not carry his anger. He releases his anger. He's angry over an injustice. He's angry over how this is affecting people, and in particular, this man. Human suffering matters to God. It matters to God. God sees this, Jesus sees this, and he acts against the injustice. His anger is driven by grief over what is being done to this human. There is an abuse going on here, and Jesus addresses the abuse, and he moves towards it. No indifference, no silence, no, this isn't my problem. No, it is your problem. You do something about that issue. When there is an injustice, something rises up inside of Jesus. No self-preservation. No, I need to reserve my kingdom and my authority. He moves towards it, even in the face of confrontation. The fact, well, these people aren't going to like me very much. No, that's not why I'm here. I'm here to move against these things. Now, turn over to the book of Amos. You ready? Boom. Amos. The song we were listening to this morning comes directly out of the book of Amos. Amos is a prophet speaking on behalf of God. And he's speaking to God's people. These are the authority figures that God is speaking to, the ones who are large and in charge. Amos chapter 5, verse 21 through 24. Listen to this. I despise your religious festivals. Your assemblies are a stench to me. Even though you bring me burnt offerings and grain offerings, I will not accept them. Though you bring choice fellowship offerings, I will have no regard for them. Away with the noise of your songs. I will not listen to the music of your harps, but let justice roll on like a river, righteousness like a never-failing stream. Strong words. I hate, I despise your gatherings. Does the idea of God hating something bother you? Does it make you uncomfortable? See, many times we think God's anger is like our anger. It may be, I don't know. But we tend to assume his anger is like my anger. We're reading a passage like this, and what's important to ask ourselves when we're reading a passage like this is, what is God angry about? What's he getting worked up about? Where is this coming from? God's anger isn't irrational. God's anger isn't as a result of unresolved hurt. It's not self-protecting. He's angry against something. But what is he angry about? Well, let's read on further in the story. Amos chapter 8, verses 4 through 6. Check this out. Hear this, you who trample the needy and do away with the poor of the land, saying, when will the new moon be over so that we may sell grain and the Sabbath be ended that we may market wheat? Skimping on the measure, boosting the price and cheating with dishonest scales, buying the poor with silver and the needy for a pair of sandals, selling even the sweepings with the wheat. Now, what do we have here? We have a group of religious people who are called for a higher purpose. God's called them to be a healing presence in the world, to address the needs of those who are in need. That's their purpose. They are a gift to the world. They're there to show what God is like. He is kind and he is generous and he is gracious and he is compassionate towards those in need. But what are they doing? They're ignoring the needy. They're turning away. They're blinded by their own greed and consumption. They're consuming, taking for themselves. And in verse 6 of chapter 8, look at what it says. Selling their sweepings with the wheat. They were taking the wheat, mixing it in with the dirt, and because the needy needed these things, they were making a profit off of those in need. Sweeping it all together, the leftovers, the junk, all the little pieces that didn't matter, and selling it to the needy because, well, they're going to buy it anyways because they need it. They're profiting on the backs of the weak and the vulnerable. God is opposed to that kind of activity. That which is against the human, especially to the vulnerable, God says, no, I hate that. I don't want your songs. I don't want your festivals. I don't want to hear any more about what you say. Deal with this. And he calls them on that. This is abuse. So the question, again, rises up inside of me is, are we getting angry about the right kinds of things? Are we getting angry about these kinds of things? God's anger is over injustice and over the abuse of people. He's angry. This brings up another really big question, is what does your anger lead you to? Back to where we started, the question that was asked of me as I moved into the ministry. Jonathan, what makes you angry? And what does your anger lead you to? What rises up inside of you? Back to Mark chapter 3, verse 5. He looked around at them in anger, snorting, furious, and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts, and said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out, and his hand was completely restored. Again, his anger is mixed in with grief. His anger moves him to heal and deal with the injustice, to bring peace to that which is broken. And he is acting on that which God has placed inside of him to humanize the suffering human. And he speaks to it. No concern for self-preservation. This isn't about him. But what his anger leads him to is to deal with the injustice. So my word to you is, pay attention to what makes you angry. Pay attention to it. Because maybe that is your call and your mission in life. Maybe it can help you determine, what am I doing here? Why am I here? What fuels you to get up in the morning and go, this is why I'm here, to deal with this? And it may be one issue that rises up in you all the time, and you're like, I'm going to do something about that. And it's not this, I'm just kind of waiting for God to tell me what to do, and I'm sitting back. It's like, no. He's laid it all out for me in the scripture as to what I'm supposed to do. But am I listening? And am I paying attention to what God is saying to me? Do you remember when Jesus overturned the tables in the temple? He comes into the temple courts, and they're buying and they're selling, and they turned in the temple courts into something that it was not supposed to be. And Jesus comes in and he flips over the tables, and we're thinking, man, is he just having a bad day? What is going on? What is causing this anger? Did you know that the temple courts, this area, was reserved for the Gentiles? It was the place inside the temple for people to connect with God, that the Gentiles were considered unclean, so they couldn't go into the inner courts. But they created a place for the Gentiles to come so that they too could connect with God and make their offerings. And what they had done is they turned it into something else. And what they're doing is they're keeping people out. And so Jesus comes in and says, that's not okay. You cannot keep people from God. You cannot put more blame and shame on people. And so he comes and he turns the tables over and says, we're not going to turn this into profit. We're not going to create something that this is not supposed to be. And he's angry, and rightly so. And he flips over the tables and says, no. That's not okay. Once again, humanity making a profit at the expense of the weak, keeping those disconnected from God, enforcing the lie that you're not okay the way God made you, and pushing them out. Jesus is angry because they're keeping people from connecting with God and connecting with their life. Once again, they're communicating, you're not acceptable to God. So they push out and they make profit. Now let me ask you again. What does your anger lead you to? What is it leading you to? Now at this point, I can feel my blood starting to boil a little bit. It starts to boil and it starts to rise up inside of me. Because when I see religious leaders and institutions, this thing that we call church, not acting the way that we read about in the scripture, I get really, really mad. And when I see leaders up front heaping condemnation and blame and shame on people, it makes me really, really mad. Something rises up inside of me that tells me this is not okay. This is not right. I am driven through life with this undercurrent always going on. It's always happening to me. And when I'm out in the community and I'm with people and I see what happens to them and how they're told they're not okay, there's something that rises up inside of me and I move towards that and I speak hope and healing and love and grace. And I can honestly tell you, this is not about me. It has nothing to do with me. You know what? It'd be a lot easier for me to just sit back and ignore this and just work at Trader Joe's. So I don't have to deal with this. But it's not okay. It's not okay. And it would be a lot easier to ignore it. It'd be a lot easier just to be a cynic and not change. And that's what cynicism does. It just keeps us from changing. How about you? What makes you angry? What rises up inside of you? What causes you to say, something needs to be done about this, and I'm not going to stop? But it fuels me through life. There are probably reoccurring themes that rise up inside of you that I would encourage you to pay attention to. That God-given spark and desire, do something about this. Do something about this. Pay attention to that. I am driven by this constant buzz, and I would call it a buzz, man, by grace and peace, that wherever I go, I want to bring grace and peace. I've had people over my lifetime telling me in private meetings where they have said, stop preaching about grace. We're so tired of hearing it. We want more hellfire and brimstone. I'm serious. And they'll say these things like, well, a lot of us feel this way. And I'm thinking, are you schizophrenic? Because I only see one of you here. Who are all these people we're talking about? We love to bring people along that aren't there. A lot of us feel this way. Two or three of you feel that way. Stop it. And I said, I can't. Because, my friends, once you've tasted something, you can't untaste it. And once you've seen something, you can't unsee it. Once you've experienced it, you can't unexperience it. It fuels me. And instead of just sitting back in my cynicism, which, you know what, it's a lot easier to be a cynic than it is to be a game changer. But instead of sitting back, this thing fuels me and continues to move me and continues to call me. I have friends who are outraged at the educational system. And you know what? They're doing something about it because they're outraged by it. And they see the injustice that happens in our educational system, and instead of sitting back, they're moving towards it. And they're doing something about it. They're training themselves. They're preparing themselves because they want to help people. Not just sitting back in their cynicism, but moving towards it, fueled by this anger. And they keep bumping up against the system because the system is broken. And they bump up against it. Years ago, I read this, and I don't know if these are accurate, but I was told that 114 million children around the world do not get a basic education. 114 million. If it's more or less, it's still too many. There are 584 million women around the world that are illiterate. Again, big number. Does that make you angry? Some people get angry at our legal system over issues of law enforcement, and they should. And instead of being a cynic, they move towards it, and they want to do something about it. And so they're moving towards it because it rises up inside of them. And it's difficult. I know it's difficult because you keep bumping up against the system. And it's the same in this religious game. Keep bumping up against the system, this resistance. And one of the major snares that I've been alluding to here is this idea of cynicism. I know a lot of church leaders who are cynics. There's a lot to be cynical about. Because when we get together, it's like, oh, so-and-so said this, and then this happened, and you're like, ah, screw it, I'm out. And all this cynicism arises, and you lose heart, and you don't want to do anything about it because it's just easier to ignore it. So I thought about my own cynicism, and I thought about cynicism that I've seen in others, and here I have a few thoughts that I want to share with you. See if this resonates with you. Cynicism says, I can't change. It says, we aren't capable of change. It says, there's no way this situation will ever change, so why try? Cynicism is the voice of resistance that keeps us from what's possible. Cynicism encourages us to keep a tight grip on control. Cynicism dismisses faith as something that is childish and just idealistic. It completely closes the doors and windows to the potential arrival of hope, diminishing hope with labels like utopian, idealistic, and Pollyanna. Cynics are risk adverse. They stay aloof and disengaged from others and themselves as a means of pain avoidance. Connecting with others or investing our emotions or feelings deeply might, in the mind of a cynic, lead to hurt and suffering, which would distance them from the good life as they imagine it. Cynics set the bar too low in order to avoid disappointment. Be careful not to slide into cynicism. Be careful. Pay attention. Again, my question for us this morning is, does your anger lead you to action? Are you doing something about the things that rise up inside of you? Are you driven by this need to do something about the injustice that you see? And again, where I have to be careful is I am a cynic about the state of the church here in America. And I want to be part of the solution. And sometimes I really honestly dislike what the church has become. I really dislike it. And there's a big part of me, if I'm straight with you, that says, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I am tired of these games. I am tired about arguing over things that really don't matter. If you want to put the chairs at this angle or this angle, knock yourself out, man. Whatever. I'm tired of having meetings about meetings. If we're having meetings about meetings, don't you think we've forgotten the plot? And it might be time to get into another game. I remember calling a friend at a church, and he says, I have a meeting I have to go to about where to put the communion table. Like, I said, why don't you come to Whole Foods with me, and let's have a sandwich. Let them figure out where the table goes. I think it's going to be fine. And I know it sounds exhausting, but how in the world are we ever going to get anywhere by sitting back and being a cynic? And I hope and I pray in my lifetime, my friends, to be able to invite a few hearts to see that they are never far from God and that he's always with you. I'm hoping that in my lifetime that the common verbiage that is used to talk about Christians, you want me to answer that? Should I answer it? That's all right. Sometimes things happen. Yeah. And just as a side note, if your phone rings next time, just let me answer it. Like, give it to me, and we'll talk. We'll see what's going on. I'm really hoping that in my lifetime we can change the common perception of Christians in our world from Christians are people who hate to Christians are people who love. I really hope that. What makes you angry? And what is it leading you to? And the last question is, what are you going to do about it? Okay? Set with that this morning. And the worship team is going to come back up. Let's respond in song. Please remember, as you move back into Monday, whether you find yourself in cubicle world, or you're in a hospital, or in the educational system, or you're home loving your children, taking care of them, nurturing them, that the same breath that breathed order into the chaos in Genesis chapter 1 lives and dwells in you. That same breath was given to you as a gift, and it's there. The breath of God breathes life into your bones. The same Spirit that raised Christ from the dead lives in you. How in the world can we contain that or understand that? I don't know. But man, think on these things this week. Ask yourself the questions this week: what makes me angry, and what is it leading me to? Pay attention to what God is saying to your heart. Go now, and may the grace and peace of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ be with all of you. Thank you.